The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Crime Prevention 101. We're so happy you joined us this week. Over the next hour, you'll learn the tips, tricks, and vital information that will help you keep yourself confident and safe. Now, here's your host, Susan Bartlestone.
Welcome to Crime Prevention 101. This is the personal safety show with an optimistic perspective on a sober subject. I'm your host, Susan Bartlestone. And it is my great privilege to spend the next hour with you helping you keep yourself safe. And I can't believe that it is October already. And I want to remind you that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I'm going to be doing several programs on this topic later on throughout the month. So be sure to check my blog site, Crime Prevention 101, for resources and a list of things that you can do to make a difference or contribution. Now, my topic today is one that's been in the news pretty much every day for the past few weeks. By now, I'm sure that everyone has heard about the J.C. Dugard case in California, where an 11-year-old girl was abducted and forced to live in the backyard of her abductors, Philip and Nancy Garrido, let us not forget the wife in this, in a series of ramshackle tents and shacks, even bearing him two children. So what I want to talk about today is how you can keep your neighborhood safe from sexual predators like the Garridos, as well as from burglars, arsonists, and other quality of life kind of crimes. And also, what to do if you have suspicions about your neighbors. So my first guest today is Neighborhood Watch pioneer Stephanie Mann, who specializes in mobilizing neighborhoods to reduce crime. And then in the second half of the show, I'm going to be talking to Maureen Kanka, whose 7-year-old daughter Megan was raped and murdered in 1994, and due to her family's efforts, Megan's Law came about. And if you're not familiar with Megan's Law, Megan's Law is one of the best tools that we have for keeping our neighborhoods and children safe from sexual predators. So we're going to talk about that. So this is a really important show. And if you know someone who should be listening to today's show who might not be, please send out a text about us, send an IM or a tweet if you're on Twitter, anything, so that they can join us too. All right, now, my first guest, Stephanie Mann, she is a neighborhood crime prevention consultant and founder of the Safe Kids Now organization. And she has 40 years of experience, that's right, 40, working in cities, in high crime areas and suburbs, starting as a volunteer, a community organizer, and a consultant. She is the author of 3 books on building safe neighborhoods, including Alternative to Fear, Guidelines for Safer Neighborhoods, which she wrote in 1969, and this book helped launch the National Neighborhood Watch Program, which we're also going to talk about. She also says that she's a wife, mother of 3, and grandmother of 8 amazing kids. So, Stephanie, welcome to Crime Prevention 101.
Thank you, Susan. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Now, Stephanie, on your website, you say, every predator, every abuser, every criminal, and even every potential terrorist lives in somebody's neighborhood.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why we need to get these neighborhoods working together and communicating, because that's one of the biggest problems we had in the JC case, because people were not communicating.
Let's talk a little bit about this first. I mean, how did these people live? These little girls lived in this fellow's backyard for 18 years without anyone being able to do anything about it. What's your take on this?
Well, you know, this is a horror story, and what's interesting about this particular case and the sad part of this case is that people knew, and not everybody because they didn't talk to each other, but one neighbor knew that there were kids in the backyard, and they wondered about it. Another adult called the father Creepy Phil. They knew he was strange. Another one knew that he was a sex offender. They had checked it out on Megan's Law, so they knew that. And the police had been called. A 911 call had come in, and the officer had come to the door, didn't go too far beyond that, didn't even know it was a sex offender. Their communication broke down. And there was a collapse of communication, and these children were not rescued, and they could have been rescued a whole lot sooner just if neighbors had talked to each other and the police had talked to the neighbors and they had a network of support. That whole system broke down. And I would like to say that, you know, we can't leave this whole responsibility of keeping our neighborhood safe to police alone, and we cannot leave it up to just the social agencies. We have to talk to each other in our neighborhoods.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I saw an article here that, I mean, one of his neighbors, he was very clever in terms of what he did in terms of hiding it. Although why he didn't want the children in the house, I mean, there's no way for me to even figure that one out. But there was, and if you go to MSNBC, Stephanie, they have a video of these tents, these ugly. It was a mess. It was a shambles. It was like a slum in the backyard. And this is again something that you would think that the neighbors would want to get together on. Was it just a matter of bad communication among them?
You know, we do not promote as well as we should in our communities. And starting at the top with the mayor and the city council, we should have a promotion, a campaign in every community for neighbors to get to know each other. And we should make it easier for them, because a lot of people are a little fearful of their neighbors or their fear of rejection. But we need to do a whole lot better at getting neighbors connected, because the disconnect between neighbors and the disconnect between police and neighbors allows these problems to grow and stay, are not solved. But when people do talk to each other, they would have found this out years ago. And the idea that, as you said, this is kind of like a slum area.
Yeah,
well, the rest of the neighborhood is not like that.
No, it looked like a very nice neighborhood, truthfully.
Right.
And have you looked at those videos? I mean, it was just incredible.
Well, as a matter of fact, that particular neighborhood in Antioch, California, is about 40 miles from me.
Oh, really?
It's in my county.
Have you ever been in through that area?
Not in that direct area, but we started a crime prevention committee in Antioch many years ago. And it's still there, but it isn't functioning the way it should. So
they ought to bring you back in there. I'm telling you.
Well, you know, and the neighbors have to understand too that it is their responsibility to take more, be more observant in the neighborhood and try and help people, because this should not have happened.
Actually, oh, absolutely not.
And may I say that there are 2.4 police officers, and this is an average, in every community. That's all. 2.4 to 2.7 police officers for every 1,000 citizens. Now, that
really
means that you cannot rely on the police to keep you safe. That's all there is to it. So you're going to have be more dependent on not your police department, but your neighbors.
Well, talk a little bit about what a Neighborhood Watch program is and how it might have addressed, you know, this situation here.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of times people have just put up signs in the neighborhood that says Neighborhood Watch and think that's good enough. That is not good enough You know, the idea of the word neighborhood watch sounds passive, as if, oh, we'll just kind of watch out and, you know, if we see anything, we'll report it. No, neighborhood watch is about connecting with people, but that hasn't really been stressed. When we started 40 years ago, and actually Alternative to Fear was written in 1975 after we had worked on creating a safe community. Well, let me give you just a little background. We had 17,000 residents in our community. We had 400 burglaries, and we didn't even have a local police department.
Wow.
So what we had to do was, as a volunteer group, we looked at each other and said, okay, now what are we going to do? Because this is intolerable. Well, we found out that most of our problems were committed by our own children. Over
really?
Half of our crime problems were our kids burglarizing houses, stealing, you know, and then the drug problem was coming in at that time. You may remember that it was a pretty big problem in the 70s of drugs.
Sure.
So we got organized, and we called on our friends, and we said, if you will pull these neighbors together, we'll come and talk to them about what they need to know. Neighborhood, and we called it the Neighborhood Responsibility Program. Mm-hmm. We never heard of Neighborhood Watch.
Okay.
But we wanted people to take responsibility for the neighborhood and for the kids. So that's how we got started, and within 2.5 years, we reduced our own crime problem 48% without a police department.
That's fantastic, and that's extremely impressive. And I think with the technology today, your neighborhood watch would probably have known about this fellow being a sex offender. The neighborhood would have known, because I'm pretty sure that that's being in a neighborhood group like that, you would want to get that word out there along with, you know, some tips and safety tips and warnings and, you know, maybe making sure that the police are aware about this kind of thing. Do you think that would be something nowadays that would be done?
Well, we have to. There is no other way to actually, let me just say that every single juvenile delinquent, every thief, every predator, they're all growing up, as you mentioned, in somebody's neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to stop crime and break the cycle, we're going to have to go back. And this is what we used to do, is take more responsibility for the kids on the block. And we stopped the bad behavior when they were 4, 5, 6 instead mm-hmm. of 20, you know, and put them in jail, or when they're teenagers and they're into drugs. So neighbors are a fantastic support system for you as a homeowner, because they can also be mentors for your kids. But we've also got another problem here. We've got a lot of parents that feel so defensive about having their children corrected. And neighborhoods,
yeah.
We don't have to do it in a harsh way, but we need to talk to each other and listen.
Well, it is a fine line. All right, now Stephanie, coming up, we're going to talk more about some of the tips that you can implement right away to help your kids stay safe, and maybe some more tips about organizing. I just wanted to remind you, you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter, and I know that Stephanie Mann is on Facebook because
right.
she contacted me, right?
That's right.
There's plenty of show left, so start tweeting about us.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, How to Respond to Danger in 20 Seconds or Less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information. Listen for the American Advisor with Joe Battaglia twice every week. This is a live call-in talk show where Joe discusses the economic and political events that affect your investments. Joe's macro market calls have helped thousands of investors pave their way to a more secure financial future. As a bonus, everyone who calls into the program will receive a 1964 Silver Kennedy half-dollar coin that's been graded uncirculated. The American Advisor is heard every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel, and every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions at fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions at fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Hi, it's Susan Bartlestone here. And I'm speaking with neighborhood safety specialist Stephanie Mann. And you can find out more information about her programs and her wonderful books on her website, safekidsnow.com. And you can also sign up for her newsletter there. And that's actually how I found out about her. And if you would like to email her with any of your questions about what you might be able to do in your own neighborhood, her email is safeneighborhoods@gmail.com. And we're gonna pick up our discussion in just a second. But first, I have just got to tell you about My Mobile Witness. Now, this is a free service that transforms your camera cell phone into a personal safety device. For example, if you are in a stalking situation, if you have an order of protection against somebody, if you're a witness to a crime that's happening, if you just find yourself in any kind of situation that might be potentially dangerous, and I tell you what, I would have been clicking away on that Garrido's backyard there, you're going to want to check out My Mobile Witness. And special offers are available for colleges and universities. So go to MyMobileWitness.com, and it's M-O-B-I-L-E, MyMobileWitness.com, for more information. All right, Stephanie.
I'm so glad you mentioned that Mobile Witness, because those I have an iPhone, and that is an amazing piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. And to turn around and take pictures of suspicious activities or anything else is a fantastic asset for anyone.
Absolutely, and I think it's essential for any kind of neighborhood organization as well. It's one of the best the tools you have to keep a record. And what My Mobile Witness does, which I particularly really like this setup, you can send the picture and it gets time stamped and dated to a digital vault, so no one can take it out of your phone except law enforcement. And it's there no matter what. And and you can even text, I saw the Garrido's doing this and this on such and such a date, you know, and you have a record of anything that you want to keep track about, that you want to interest the police in, or whatever it might be. So, this is a very good device in terms of crime prevention and neighborhood safety.
You bet.
Now, you got a lot of tips for us. Give us a couple of myths about crime that will put a family in danger, and then a couple of tips for parents about their kids, because we don't want any more J.C. Dugard cases here.
No, we certainly do not. And the number one myth is, I think, and I've seen it for years, is the police can protect you from crime. That they react to crime, and it is citizen involvement that prevents crime from happening in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So if people had been involved in the Garrido neighborhood in what was going on and observant and taken pictures, reported it, that case would have been solved years ago. So that's
Indeed.
The number one myth, that the police can do it. They can't, and they really need your support if they are going to be effective. They, as I say, react. You prevent. Mm-hmm. So that's one
good
tip.
Point.
Well, that's one myth. Another myth is that most people feel powerless. You are not powerless. Oh, my goodness. I don't know how many times I've said to people, you have amazing power to change this community. We were a group of 10 people that changed a community of 17,000. I mean,
that is amazing.
I mean, that, but that is, what's amazing about it is that people don't see their own power. We have the power to, if we don't want to change the whole community, goodness, we can certainly change that neighborhood. We can make it safe. And another myth about that is that we are, I see so many people say, well, it's hopeless. It's a bad situation. No, it's not. The reality is what you believe. If you believe this neighborhood can change, you can do it. And do not get discouraged from rejection, because I've had people say to me, well, I knocked on so-and-so's door, and they weren't very nice, and they weren't courteous, and they wouldn't get involved. That's okay. What happens, well, we used to have, we have block parties on our, in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Most of the people didn't show up the first year. They just don't. They kind of, you know, kind of shy away. But over the years, we'd have a 4th of July party or a block party or have guests over at Christmas. Gradually, everybody kind of incorporated themselves. And yes, we do have a couple of different kind of neighbors that don't want to be involved, and that's okay. You don't need everyone to create a safe neighborhood.
That's a good point. And will this work as well in a, because I know it's in your bio, you've worked in high crime urban areas.
Right.
I'm in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not the high crime area that we were, but there certainly, of course, is crime. But we're also notoriously grumpy. We don't want to know our neighbors. How would you address something like that? I mean, I don't even know if you could get 10 people in New York City.
Well, let me tell you something that I'm working on now. I'm creating a new book. It's called The Good Neighbor Guide. And what we're doing is working with the churches in the inner city and civic groups. For example, in Oakland, California, which is one, let's see, I think it's number 5 in the list of the 10 most dangerous cities.
Really? Oakland?
Oakland, California. And there are 463 churches in Oakland. That's just the churches.
Oh, without, good point.
Yeah, and if each church would adopt one block, just one block, the block around their church, it would not only protect themselves, you know, from graffiti, from vandalism, from people coming in and stealing. You'd involve the neighbors to protect the church, but the church can become a resource to help the neighbors.
And any other religious institution, because that is one place where we are not afraid to say hello and get to know our, you know, fellow worshipers. I think that's an amazing idea to maybe start in that area. You know,
yeah, because then you have a built-in support group right there. And you don't have to preach to people that this is about just caring about a neighborhood. So people from the church can just go, or the synagogue or the temple or whatever, or a civic group can go out and start talking to the neighbors. You'd be surprised how grateful people are. I have gone door-to-door, oh, my goodness, now for 35 years, I guess, more than that. And people are so, gosh, I was hoping somebody would, you know, reach out, that kind of attitude. And we ask mm-hmm. just a couple of questions. Have you been a victim of crime? Might be one question. What is your biggest concern in our neighborhood? And then will you help? Now, the ones that say, yeah, I can help, I can do something, pull them together as a group, and there you've got your planning committee.
Now, I know in my area that the Neighborhood Watch programs are under the police auspices. Is that true across the nation? I mean, the police will encourage and will help you and give you focal point and literature and all kinds of things. Is that just here, or is that everywhere?
No, that's in a lot of many areas, and it's kind of evolved over the years. at first, back in the 70s, they tried to do it all. And they'd have all the police, and they'd go into the neighborhood and so forth, and it became a real police program. I am suggesting that people take responsibility of their of their neighborhood first, and then invite the police to come and make a presentation. But first get organized, because that's what's changed. The police do not have the resources. As a matter of fact, they're cutting back. 63% of the police departments are cutting back because of financial problems. And find out. Go down to your police department and ask them, you know, what kind of resources do you have for my neighborhood? They can give you flyers that you can pass out. Read the flyer. Yeah. Most people don't read flyers, so educate your neighbors as you go around and talk to them about what is suspicious, what do we need to do in our neighborhood to take back from we've got some problems here. How do we solve these problems? And that's why I wrote Safe Homes, Safe Neighborhoods, Stopping Crime Where You Live. It's an encyclopedia for how to keep your neighborhood safe. And you can find it in most libraries. It was published a number of years ago, but in many libraries it's still there. So you can look it up and find, or you can get one on my website at safekidsnow.com. So there are a lot of resources out there to help you, but you need to take the initiative to make the change in your neighborhood.
There are some national resources as well, right? There's a national Neighborhood Block Watch Association, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes. All you have to do is type in, well, there's the National Crime Prevention Council. They're loaded with information.
Absolutely.
We have information on how to adopt a block. There are a lot of, type in neighborhoods, type in block parties. I mean, you can have all kinds of information, like, well, here are some projects that people can do, because a lot of people don't want to start out going door to door. They may feel a little shy about that, but just have a social gathering, or you can just map the neighborhood with a friend. Find out what are the hot spots in the neighborhood. How safe is this neighborhood? But you need
Stephanie,
to talk to people.
Can you write up a little guideline or make me an excerpt from the book, and I will post it on the show notes for this segment of the show that people can do to maybe you know, get started with this. And I'd love to do that.
Okay.
And I can't thank you enough for being on the show with me. All right, Stephanie Mann, her website is safekidsnow.com. So thank you again, Stephanie.
Well, listen, thank you so much, Susan, and thank you for the work you're doing, because we need to put prevention at the top of the list here.
Oh, thank you.
Every
yes,
community needs to be much more involved in preventing rather than reacting to crime.
Absolutely. All right.
And I invite people to join our, to subscribe, because I'm sending out little videos on those emails on exactly what to do and how to do it.
Oh, good. And absolutely, when you go to SaveKidsNow.com, sign up for her newsletter, because it was very informative for me. Thank you so much again, Stephanie.
Well, you're quite welcome, and it's great to talk to you, Susan.
All right. Now, every parent has the right to know if a dangerous sexual predator lives in their neighborhood. I'm going to be talking when we come back about how you can find out if there's a predator in your neighborhood. My next guest is Maureen Kanka, the driving force behind the life-saving Megan's Law.
News, opinion,
hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information. Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions at fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions at fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Hey, welcome back. And if you're just tuning in, we've been talking about the J.C. Dugard case, and my next guest is Maureen Kanka from the Maureen Nicole Kanka Foundation, and we'll be talking about how Megan's Law can alert you to potential danger in your area. And just a quick reminder, join us online at crimeprevention101.com, where you can get more information about my wonderful guests and show topics. You can listen to the show as a podcast there. You can also get in my mailing list or sign up to receive the show as a podcast. Now, Richard and Maureen Kanka and their three children lived for 15 years in a quiet suburban town, Hamilton, New Jersey, not too far from where I am, really. On July 29, 1994, their lives shattered forever when their 7-year-old daughter, Megan, was lured into a neighbor's home on the pretense of seeing his puppy, which is a very common lure. Shortly after, about 30 yards from her front doorstep, Megan Kanka was raped and murdered. And the murderer of their daughter was a convicted sex offender who had been living right across the street from them, completely unknown to them. The result of this tragedy was a nationwide law which was signed into being May 17, 1996 by President Clinton. It's called Megan's Law. It's named after her daughter. And mandates that every state in the country notify the public when dangerous sexual offenders are residing in their area. I'm going to find out today how this works a little bit. Megan, welcome to Crime Prevention 101.
Thank you, Susan, and it's Maureen.
Oh, sorry,
that's
Maureen,
okay.
Right.
That's
I apologize.
Okay. Nope, that's. I have no problem with that.
Right. Maureen, you said on your website, we knew nothing about him. If we had been aware of his record, my daughter would be alive today.
That's very true. One thing I'd like to point out, when you were doing the intro on what happened with Megan, he was a twice-convicted pedophile.
Twice.
Maybe he was his third victim. So this isn't somebody who just started out sexually abusing children. He had a record, which most of them do, you know, and he had been in jail before. We had no knowledge that he was a convicted pedophile, and there were also two other men residing in the home with him that were also convicted pedophiles.
Really?
And it wasn't until she disappeared and the police started their investigation and, you know, when they started focusing asking questions, that's when they started focusing on that house and learned that there were three pedophiles living across the street.
You know, that whenever I hear stories like that, I mean, it just makes my skin crawl. And earlier in the show, we were talking about Philip and Nancy Garrido, and Philip Garrido was also a convicted
Correct.
Sexual offender. What's your take? You must be getting a lot of questions about this particular case.
Well, you know, not only, you know, a convicted offender, he was on parole. I mean,
right.
He was under the parole board's jurisdiction. I mean, this case, I think what this case shows is, first off, a tremendous lack of doing their job on the parts of the state and their law enforcement. Somebody definitely dropped the ball. You know, somebody had asked me in reference to this case, well, you know, don't you think that, you know, Megan's Law failed here? And I said, well, no, it actually did. I said, you had neighbors that were aware that he was an offender, which is what Megan's Law is all about. It provides the awareness that the offender is there. I said, then you had neighbors who notified the police that they saw children around there in the backyard and they thought there was some type of an encampment back there. And the police never, investigated it fully. The problem wasn't with the notification. The problem wasn't with anything other than you had law enforcement that failed to do their job. Most people in the public, when we call the police, we expect them to take our complaint and to investigate it. Once you do that, it's out of our hands. I mean, you know, we are very limited to what we could do at that point. They expected this police officer to go and check this out, which he did not do sufficiently. And look at how tragic this is. You know, you have, thank God, you know, she's alive. You know, she's a grown woman now, a grown woman who was sexually abused for years, had children with an offender for years. And you can only imagine what the psychological ramifications are with all of that.
Now, believe me, what they're going through, most of us can't even begin to imagine.
And Susan, that's the other part of this, I really believe. I don't think, and I do, no excuse by any way for the police in this case, but I don't think that as a society, and I mean law enforcement as well, that people have a good enough grasp on these types of crimes. This is a whole different type of criminal we're looking at here. This is not your robber that goes in and, you know, who steals and robs from a store. You know, look at this man. He had a compound, like a home compound hidden in his backyard. How crazy is that? And how many times have we seen where there have been offenders in the past who have had secret rooms and kept people as slaves, sex slaves, in their basements?
That's what
we're dealing with. I mean, we're talking about a whole different type of criminal. And I don't think that most people in the public can ever, and including law enforcement, unless they are really trained in this area, can fully comprehend that. I really don't.
Even though the people knew he was nutty, they dismissed everything.
You had somebody under parole. He was under parole, and I believe he also had the bracelet. He had the GPS bracelet on his leg, if I'm not mistaken. My God, I mean, you know, you can't get better secured than that. And what that shows is a total failure from the law enforcement end of it. What that screams is that, you know, that if we're going to have law enforcement monitoring and watching these people, they have to be very equipped and they have to be very educated so they know exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
Mayor, and I also read somewhere that Philip Garrido had apparently avoided sex offender registration for about 8 years after he abducted J.C. Dugard. And I want to talk a little bit about that, about sex offender registration and about how Megan's Law works in that.
Well, you know, as far as like the sex offender registration part of it, you know, when the law was put into place, what it did was it required states to notify the public of dangerous sex offenders. And that was, you know, all around the country.
And how is this notification done?
Well, it varies. There's a couple different ways, and you have to keep in mind that. And the reason there are some different ways that they're not all uniform, is because every state has its own state constitution. So every state has basically put their law into place according to what is allowed and what is best for them. That's why it's not uniform, but there's a couple different variations. The most common and the law that most states use in the country is a tiered system. And basically what they do is they have what they call a risk assessment scale. And it's sort of like it's a criteria for placement of sex offenders. And it's almost like a test. They look at the crime that the offender did, and there are point values given for all different parts of that crime, you know, whether there was violence used, a weapon used, the type of crime, how old the person was, the victim, many, many components that are looked at, and they're given points. At the end of the questionnaire, so to speak, the risk assessment, you add up the points, and where that lands is what tier the offender falls in. Now, if you have
Maureen, let me just stop you right here.
Sure.
We're gonna take a quick pause. When we come back, we're gonna find out more about this rating system and more about what you can do if you find that a dangerous sex offender is residing in your neighborhood. I want to make sure that I give you out her website. It's MeganNicoleKankaFoundation.org. We will be right back.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
Total career success. What does it mean to you? Voice America presents a radio program dedicated to help you achieve your career goal. Even in times of economic uncertainty, you can achieve your financial goals. Whether you're a college grad, new in the working environment, or a top-level executive, you will benefit from the practical and proven advice on job search and career advancement. Join Ken and Cheryl Dawson every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, for total career success on Voice America.
Are you destined to be an everyday change agent in your organization, your relationships, your community? Learn how to become one when you tune in to The Change Agent on the Voice America Variety Channel. Justin A. Flunder, the Chief Change Agent Leader of the Flundonian Group, will help you examine every aspect of your personal and professional life. By observing your own thoughts, words, and actions, you will become the everyday leader that you are meant to be. The Change Agent airs live Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Are you ready to get freed up? Join Dr. Jennifer Fried, one of America's leading psychological thinkers, for a groundbreaking program with fascinating guests and full participation from you. Freed Up will explore topics like liberation in long-term relationships, parenting in the 21st century, comfort in stressful times, and much more. Tune in to Freed Up every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel, and wake up to the heartbeat of your life.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
This is Crime Prevention 101. I'm Susan Bartlestone. Don't forget that we are available on iTunes, so you don't even have to be on your computer.
to listen to us. We're talking with Maureen Kanka about Megan's Law and about the tier system that rates sex offenders, and that kind of depends on how the notification is sent out. So we talked about, was this the most dangerous one that we were talking about
before the break? Well, that was just the scale that's used for all of them.
Okay.
So what they do is they add up all the points, you know, for what the crime was that the offender did, and then that determines what tier the offender falls into. And the tiering system is what they call low, which is tier one, moderate risk of reoffending, which is tier two, and then high risk of reoffending, which is tier three. Now, every state in the country is required to notify the public of tier three, the high risk offenders. As far as tier one and tier two, that's where it varies around the country. There are only two states that I'm aware of now that actually notify the public of every offender, and that is Connecticut and I believe it's Alaska. They have internet registries where, you know, people can go online and view all of the offenders. The rest of the states have, you know, according to tiers. New Jersey's is tier two and tier three are put online with a picture, the address, type of crime that was committed, you know, any type of identifying scores, the type of lure that was used. And also New Jersey's is not just about children. It's also about adult rapists as well. So, you know, and the majority of the states have for the adult rapes, but we list tier two and tier three. So that's
Philip
the one.
Burrito was convicted of a rape and was also, they're trying to link him to a number of different rapes
I saw that, yes. He would be, in my opinion, he would be a tier three. Of course,
yeah.
You know, a tier three shouldn't be out of prison. You know, ideally, none of these guys should be out of prison. But, you know, we have overcrowding in the prison. And then one of the problems we have when you spoke about the, you know, the failure to register, that's another problem we have, because when the law was put into place, they left it up to the offender to notify law enforcement, you know, if they're going to move and to verify their address yearly. Now, there are a number of offenders that do that and do that every year, you know, around the country. And then there are those that do not do that, and it's the ones that do not do that that probably shouldn't be out in the public in the first place.
And that's probably what Philip Garrido did for those 8 years.
Correct. And the other problem of that is the judges. You know, there are cases, I can't tell you how many cases alone here in New Jersey, not to mention, and I'm sure they're everywhere in the country, where, you know, there's a fourth degree misdemeanor. It's a crime for 18 months imprisonment if somebody fails to re-register. And the judges, when they finally catch them and they make them register again, the judges slap them on the hands and they let them go. They don't make them go back in prison for the 18 months, which they should do. And, you know, that's not just here in Jersey. That's all across the country. So we have a problem with some of the judges and what they're, you know, how they are, you know, fulfilling what the law requires also.
That's outrageous.
It is outrageous.
Sorry. And the most outrageous thing is that this man was walking around. That I think I remember he was sentenced to a huge sentence, and he served like 6 years of it. They let him out.
That's correct. Well, you know, good time credits. You know, and that was another thing. You know, we saw legislation years ago to get rid of the good time credits in the prisons, and I cannot tell you how much opposition that we ran into with that, because as we were told, you know, that's what the guards used to control prisoners, the good time credits. So, you know, there's no such thing as getting 30 years and serving 30 years. You know, the best that we were able to get legislatively was, you know, 80% of their sentence had to be served before they would be eligible for parole. But it's absolutely crazy. I mean, you know, there are so many hindrances put into place before you even, you know, attempt to do anything that, you know, really tie the laws and, you know, paralyze you from doing really effective things. It's amazing. And most of the public aren't aware of that.
It's extraordinarily frustrating, and I certainly think there should be no parole for sex offenders.
I agree, and not just no parole. They need to lock them up. I cannot tell you, Susan, how many emails I get, and I have no doubt they're from sex offenders. You know, you could read it in the paragraphs where, you know, they want to know, you know, how we feel about Megan's name being put on laws that her families, when offenders are notified to the public, they never take responsibility for what they do. They never say, well, you know, I created this in the first place by sexually abusing a child. They want to blame everybody else because of their actions. You know, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it's part of that syndrome that they have, what they can't figure out what it is. All right. What else should we know about Megan's law? I mean, what if we're not computer savvy? How are we going to find out?
Well,
in
New Jersey, we have, you know, where you can, like I said originally, you can go online for Tier 2, Tier 3 information. You could go to the police station. You can go to your local libraries, use their computers. For the high-risk offenders, the most dangerous, we also have another component in place, which I think is very important, and that's where law enforcement still will come and knock on your door and hand you a flyer with all that same information that would be online and let you know that a Tier 3 offender has moved into your neighborhood. And I think that that's very important. So for the high-risk offenders, you know, you still are going to get that notice hand-delivered by law enforcement. But people have to also remember that just because they don't receive notification, that doesn't mean that they can't have somebody who poses that type of a risk living in their neighborhood who has just not been caught. And that's where education comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like we teach our children about, you know, car safety, about looking both ways when you cross the street, about drug safety and awareness, we have to also teach them about sexual offenders and that there are people out there that pose risks to them. You don't have to scare your kids into educating them. It doesn't have to be like that. It's letting them know that nice people can do bad things, and just because someone is nice, it doesn't mean they're safe. And that's what I teach parents all the time, that, you know, you have to educate your kids that, yes, there are people out there that would like to touch their bodies. And you have to teach them about good touch and bad touch and what is appropriate and what's not. And it's not hard to do, and it's by doing that and adding that measure of safety that you help further, you know, safeguard the kids.
Absolutely.
It's different, unfortunately, out there. It's not like it used to be. We have created a very high awareness, and it's time that we educate and make the parents teach their kids about this and let them know that there's nothing that the child did wrong. We're bringing it out of the closet. It's that dirty, dark little secret everybody kept in the closet. You know what? We're bringing it out. We're letting the victims know they have nothing to be ashamed of, and we're putting the blame where it belongs, and that's with the offender.
And one of the points that you make on your website as well is that most often it is someone familiar to the child that they have.
Absolutely.
Some kind of trust with, like a neighbor who's got a puppy, you know.
Absolutely. 80% of the offenders are known to the children, whether it is a neighbor, it could be an acquaintance, somebody that they see every day, not necessarily somebody that they talk to and they know, but somebody that they see visually and they are familiar with. And then sadly, it's through incest in the home. You know, it's there. 20% accounts for stranger danger. So yes, we still have to educate our kids about stranger danger. What makes
right.
it harder is where we would talk to them about that monster, you know, that's out there. Now we have to put a recognizable face, and sometimes face of somebody that is nice and somebody that person, that child may care for. So it
and
makes
even
it
someone
much
in,
more
yeah,
difficult.
Someone in the family, a relative,
exactly.
Someone that they know.
But it is doable. It can be mm-hmm. done without scaring the kids, and it will make them a whole lot safer than they are now without the education.
Now, you have some good resources on your website. You've also got two interesting programs that people can check out that you've implemented in New Jersey. And one is called Check It Out, which is about finding out who's working with your kids in terms of sports, their coaches, their managers,
correct,
people like that, and Who's Watching Our Children program. I want to make sure I give that website again. It's Megan
Nicole Kanka Foundation, all one, .org. And I'm going to post a link to it on my website so that people can find it very easily. Maureen, I thank you so much for all the for coming on today and for all the things you do. And maybe we'll do a follow-up in 6 or 8 months and see what's going on there. So
that'll
thank
be
you
great.
So much.
My pleasure. And
okay.
I hope the public keeps safe.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Thanks so much, hon.
All right. So now I'm going to post a link to all my guests on my website, Crime Prevention 101. We're going to post some tips that Maureen Kanka had from her website and some information about these programs that she recommends and about Megan's Law. Please continue to send me your comments about the show and ask questions or anything else that you'd like me to address on the air. My website is solutions@fightsafe.com. Well, this is a wrap for this week. Don't forget, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. I've got a number of programs coming up that's going to commemorate this. Next week, I'll be talking about how you can organize activities and observe Domestic Awareness Month in your own community. And my guests include an organization that trains hairdressers to recognize the symptoms of domestic abuse. It's called Cut It Out. You're not going to believe the great work that they're doing. I'm going to have a representative from the Family Justice Center here, and the Family Justice Center is probably the most important development in the way domestic violence cases are handled. Later on in the month, I've got a fascinating interview with domestic violence survivor Lorena Bobbitt. Yes, that Lorena Bobbitt. You won't want to miss that show. In fact, it'd be a crime not to listen. So stay tuned and stay safe.
We hope you got some useful information and inspiration this week on Crime Prevention 101. Susan Bartlestone invites you to join us again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Voice America. If you want to learn more about Susan's guest, sign up for her newsletter, or find out about upcoming teleseminars and workshops, go to www.crimeprevention101.com today. Have a great week and a safe week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.